Blog Talk Radio.
I'm scared. That didn't come out so well.
Runic symbols can call forth these powers of darkness. The demons of hell.
Well, that didn't record quite so well on the last minute. Good evening. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. That was supposed to be the intro from a great movie from 1957 starring Dana Andrews called Night of the Demon. And for its time, I thought the monster in it was pretty good and the effect with it. If you remember that thing running by the train or whatever, and mystic runes and what have you. So that sets the stage for our topic tonight, is demons. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Dave Binkley from Weird This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. You know, it sounds like it was recorded on the right track only, instead of, Minoru's usually left track only. So that may be what happened there, Dale.
Damn you, Audacity. Damn you, Blog Talk. I blame you all. Not my own technical ineptitude. Oh, no, it couldn't be that.
No, I blame Blog Talk, too. Just ask Mike Mace, ask Mike Mace how much he loves Blog Talk Radio.
He loves Blog Talk. He even honored them with an email name that we can't repeat here.
With a very special email, yeah.
Because we'd kind of like to keep our show for the time.
Here we would.
Where I'm from. Always planning, always scheming. Want to welcome good old Bob and Fogsbane to the chat to enjoy three, count them three, tales of demons.
That's right. In Inner Sanctum, Casey, crime photographer, and the Hall of Fantasy makes another return.
And they're kind of we're due for some Hall of Fantasy. It's been a little while.
We are.
We had Dark Fantasy and, not too long ago, but tonight.
I like to mention, I took a little trip last night, Dale, up to Cleveland in the Music Box Supper Club, right on the west bank of the flats. And there, Dan O'Shannon and Michael Shesky, who's really a pop culture historian for Northeast Ohio. They put together a new book, and right now they're working on a documentary from Captain Penny to Goulardi, but it's all about 1950s and 60s TV icons, especially kind of kids icons mostly. Goulardi did appeal to kids, but more to the older kids and the adults. Amazing talk. Learned some really neat things. Share this one thing. It's, of course, Dale, you know about Barnaby, and he was on for over 20 years, well over 20 years here on Cleveland television. And
I met Mike a number of times.
At one point.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, Mike. Evers.
Go ahead. You go.
No, I've met Mike a few times, and he is very well-versed on Cleveland media figures.
Yes. And he did the last interview with Ernie Goulardi Anderson, and it wasn't long after he concluded that interview that Ernie passed.
If you'd like to benefit from Michael Shesky's expertise, he's on one of our former shows. I don't remember which one, so just listen to the 587 that precede this one, and you'll find it. They're all in the archive. Check them out. We'll wait.
The Superman one, yes. Anyway, Barnaby was very popular, and of course, he also did personal appearances. He made money for doing personal appearances. And his schedule was getting so big, they needed to add another. That's where Woodrow the Woodsman came in. And it all boiled down to two people. It was Clay and this other guy. And Barnaby said, you know what? I can work with this Clay guy. So that's the guy I want. The guy that was runner-up to becoming Woodrow the Woodsman, this is only going to mean something to somebody from Northeast Ohio, but that guy's name was Dick Goddard.
Ha-ha.
He's our local, he went on to become an icon in local weather reports, but also spent a lot of time doing some skits with Chuck Schidowski on the Houlihan Big Chuck, Big Chuck Little John, and was one of the all-stars for Ghilardi and for Big Chuck as well. So,
yep. I believe the Superman show was November 10th of, get this, Dave, 2017, when Michael Chesky joined us. Lighthouse Point.
Holy
was
cow.
Program. Yeah, we've been at this a while.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. Woo.
Yep.
And he just has, he was part of the group that kind of founded a sort of a Superman society. They didn't call it that, but that's what it sort of was here in Northeast Ohio. And they rallied to get a Superman license plate for your car. So
yes.
It's there. You can pay extra money to get that if you want it.
And we could go on and about this, that particular area of time for us too, Dave, but let's move on to a little bit of oldie timey radio. That's what we're here for. And let's see. Yeah, 120 121, somewhere around there, Fogsbane. That's the one with Michael Chesky, somewhere in there. I think he was on the Saturday, so that would be 121.
Yeah, he was on the Saturday night, I believe. Yeah.
If we can remember, practically 5 years ago.
he has done a lot of research with his wife, and they have, he's got like 6, 7, 8 books out there, all about most about Cleveland media. So
yeah, I got his one about the ghoul.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, that's a pretty good. Yep.
I would have bought the latest one he did with Dan O'Shannon and his wife, but they wouldn't take my card, so I'll have to bring cash with me next time. That's all.
Someday they'll write books about you, Dave. Think about it.
Yeah. And
we're in this really bad movie,
I mean,
Spaceship One, and this little thing that we do here.
Well, I will tell you, I have written 2 books and edited one other, and they can be found in many of your finest Goodwill Industries throwaway bins. So, you know, check that out.
Oh, stop. Throwaway bin.
Anyway, we've got a lot of radio tonight, Dale.
A whole lot. Where will we start tonight? You pick.
Why don't we work our way up to, you know, to the scary part, but maybe starting with some Casey crime photographer.
That sounds good. This one's called The Demon Miner.
Yeah, and the thing about Casey, I mean, he was an icon starting back in Pulp Fiction under a variety of names, like Casey crime photographer, flash gun Casey, press photographer, all these things, but they all add up to the same thing of Casey crime photographer. It had a run, actually 5 different series on radio. Number of series was 5. I don't know how many episodes. But the person that wrote every single episode of Casey Crime Photographer, whatever name you want to give it, was Alonzo Dean Cole. He wrote every single episode. And if you recall that name, he's also the guy that wrote and acted in nearly every episode, but he wrote every episode and acted nearly every one of The Witch's Tale. He created that show, and he wrote that show and acted in it along with his wife in most of the episodes. You'll also remember that in about 1963 or 64, he figured there was no market for The Witch's Tale, and he went and destroyed every original copy,
ouch,
audio copy that he had of it. And
ouch,
the most of the copies we have survive. were the Australian versions. He sent his scripts over there, syndicated. Somebody paid him rights to do it. He sent his scripts over. They did their own productions. And that's what most of the episodes are that we have surviving today. So just thank goodness he didn't get his hands on all the originals of Casey Crime Photographer.
Amen, or we wouldn't be enjoying it today. Also, if you're watching radio, as you should, on a laptop or a desktop, or maybe if you got a pad that's big enough, I don't know. You're watching the little slideshow in there. I think I put a Casey Crime Photographer comic magazine cover in there to view as well to commemorate this story.
Yeah, and if you wonder why that fits in with the demons and stuff, well, most of the stories from The Witch's Tale had a supernatural twist, and we've aired a few of these crime photographers where there's a question of maybe some supernatural things happening. So, looking forward
Let's
to
see
this,
if that's
to,
the
to
case tonight.
Let's see.
Let's find out. This one, again, is called The Demon Miner, and it was first broadcast
on March 2nd of 1947.
The Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation brings you Crime Photographer.
Hello, Miss Williams. Casey?
Hi, Ethelbert.
Ethelbert, do you know what Casey just wanted to do?
What, Miss Williams?
Well, they just put in a fresh cement sidewalk next door, and Casey wanted to stop and write his name in it. He'll never grow up.
Well, Casey's a great name.
Oh, well, I'll go you one better than that.
Oh, hello, Mr. Marvin.
Sure. What about Anchor Hawking? You know, Anchor Hawking is a great name in glass.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Tony Marvin. Every week at this time, the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation of Lancaster, Ohio, and its more than 10,000 employees bring you another adventure of Casey Crime Photographer, ace cameraman who covers the crime news of a great city. Written by Alonzo Dean Cole, our adventure for tonight, The Demon Miner. Morning, a desolate little graveyard. In the distance, beyond the gray tombstones, can be seen the stark outlines of a towering coal breaker and row upon row of coal miners' cottages. Shivering in the cold rain, a small group of men stand bareheaded.
Won't be long now, Eddie.
No, Frank. In a couple of minutes, they'll start shoveling dirt on poor Joe's coffin.
This is the sixth time in just the last 2 months that you and me have come to the graveyard to watch a guy we've worked with put away.
I'm thinking of that, Frank.
I've known plenty of accidents to happen, but when six in a row get killed by fallen roof rock, one right after another in the same mine level, well, it makes you wonder.
Yeah, especially when you're cutting out coal in that level yourself like we are.
Some of the guys say there's a hoodoo on Bristol level, Eddie.
Old Gus Hapsel says there's worse than that.
I've heard what that guy says, but that old guy's crazy.
You think so, huh?
Huh?
Oh, hello, Gus.
I am just stand close by and hear you talk. So you think I'd be crazy, Frank, because I say a demon is kill man's in Bristol level at Lakeville Colliery.
Any guy who says that is crazy.
You do not know what we of old country know.
I was talking to a Welshman the other night, Frank, and he said when he comes from... And he comes from plenty of miners... there's something funny that happens underground. Spirits called knockers and spriggans and demon miners.
Oh, nuts.
He says this demon miner works with a pick about 10 times the size of ours. A pick that makes a big hollow sound. And when guys hear it, it means someone's gonna die.
I have heard that pick in Bristol level. Also, I have seen the demon there.
I still say nuts.
It was when Nick Tanofsky got killed. I'm working place next to Nick. All at once I hear big thump, thump, thump. And I hear Nick yell. I run quick from my place to see what happened. And in the tunnel, number 5 tunnel, I see Demon. He's dressed like Miner, but his face is white.
White?
Yeah. He has big, fat cheeks. Not like a man's.
You tell that hooey to somebody else.
All right, you be wise guy. But remember what I tell you. Someday in the mine, you will hear and see the Demon Miner.
Hand me some more tamping bags, Eddie.
Here, Frank.
I've only got one more charge to fix, and then we'll hook up to the firing box.
You're putting in a lot of powder.
30 sticks. You know, we've got the old croaker working next to us today.
Gus?
Gloomy Gus. He's got 63 place. While you were out getting powder a while ago, he came in here to borrow my pick. Said he busted a handle of his. He's as crazy as a bat. He started right in about the evil spirits again. I guess I made him sore at the cemetery the other day.
He seems to really believe he saw that Demon Miner.
And he ought to have his eyes examined, or his head.
Hello, guys.
Huh?
Oh, hello, Douglas.
Hello.
I just thought I'd tip you fellas off that the inside foreman's down here again this morning checking up. The big bosses don't like all the accidents that's been happening.
That don't bother me and Eddie.
Oh, I forgot, Frank. You're the one of the best boss miners we got here, and of course, you wouldn't let your little helper Eddie get careless.
Now, look here, Douglas. You're supposed to be an electrician. All your cables and connections are out in the tunnel, not in here. Suppose you attend to them.
Sociable guy, ain't you, Frank?
With people I like.
Okay. So long, Eddie.
So long, Douglas.
Someday I'm going to poke that guy right in the nose. I'm no hypocrite. And I'd like you better, Eddie, if you had a little more guts enough to tell him off. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry, fella.
It's okay. I know I'm kind of a soft.
You're all right. And we'll have a couple of beers when we knock off. On me.
Thanks, Frank.
Well, everything is set here. I'll string these fuse wires to the box outside. Pick up those tools and come on.
Yeah. The inside foreman spends most of his time in Bristol Level these days.
The accidents here have got him plenty worried.
Mr. Travers is a nice guy. Too bad he wasn't made superintendent.
And Travers would have made a good super. I guess he was plenty sore when Bill Jerome got the job. Well, I'm all hooked up, Eddie. Sing out the warning.
Okay.
Here she goes.
Kick up a lot of dust.
It'll settle in a minute, and we can start loading the cars.
Oh, just touch one off, Frank?
Hey, yeah, Mr. Travers. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you, Eddie?
Okay, Mr. Travers.
Have you fellas seen that electrician Douglas around here?
Just a few minutes ago. He went down tunnel number 5.
Oh, thanks. I want him to do a job.
Yeah.
Frank.
Yeah?
You and Eddie are always careful to test roof rock after you blast.
Oh, sure, Mr. Travers.
Okay. See you later.
He's worried, all right.
Yeah, but he ain't as worried as that new super is. Jerome's the guy the big bosses hold responsible for production. And that's dropped off plenty on account of them accidents.
Yeah. A lot of guys are superstitious. They won't work in Bristol Level anymore.
Croaking old Gloomy Gus has had a lot to do with that. Well, dust should be settled by now. Let's go back.
Okay.
Hand me that safety lantern. It burns all right. No gases here.
Cold broke up nice.
Gus has my pick. Get it from him, Eddie. I'll use yours to sound the roof rock while you're gone.
I'll get your pick from Gus.
It's solid here. This is okay. That chunk has to come off. Yeah, everything looks all right now. Officer. What makes that knocking? Hey, who are you coming in here? That white face.
What are you doing, Joe?
Don't! Don't! Don't!
Thank you.
There's been a seventh peculiar death in that Slateville coal mine, huh, Casey?
Yeah, happened yesterday, Ethelbert. A miner named Frank Adams was killed.
Apparently by a piece of falling roof rock, like the other men before him.
Yeah, and a few minutes ago, City Desk gave Annie and me an assignment to go to Slateville and look around.
Mm-hmm. We're taking an early train tomorrow. Want to come along, Ethelbert?
Who, me? After last week, I've had enough excitement.
Oh, you're a softie.
Well, you'll write up the story, Miss Williams, and Casey will take pictures, huh?
Oh, no, our assignment's a little bigger than that this time, Ethelbert.
Yeah?
The superintendent of the mine knows Casey. And while the state police have all the facts, he's asked the paper to have Casey do a little private investigating.
You're going to Slateville as detectives, huh?
Bill Jerome, the super, knows about a couple of lucky breaks I've had working with the cops. So he's got an idea that Well, I don't know. When I'm in the city here, I know my way around. I've got a lot of smart, friendly cops to back me up when I make a play, but, well, I don't know anything about coal mines.
Afraid you won't do so good when you're on your own, huh?
I think our boyfriend has a case of cold feet, Ethelbert.
Huh? What?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess you're right, Annie. Look, I'll see you for later.
Where are you going?
Well, I'm going to the public library. I'm going to read up on coal mines. Yeah, when I see Bill Jerome tomorrow, I won't be altogether a dope. Well, Casey, this latest roof rock accident differed from the previous ones in an important particular. Frank Adams lived long enough to mumble a few words.
Yeah? What were they, Bill?
White-faced demon miner.
Demon miner.
Say anything else?
Nothing that could be distinguished.
This Gus Hapsel you mentioned, he described the demon miner before as having a white face, didn't he?
Yeah, after Nick Tarnowski was killed.
Yes, and this thing was dressed in miner's working clothes and had very fat cheeks.
Yeah.
Well, who was the first to reach this miner, Frank Adams?
Gus Hapsel was. He usually worked next to Adams, but he'd gone to borrow a pick. Gus says he heard Adams scream and he hurried back.
Yeah, was Eddie Bliss the second to reach Adams?
Yeah. A few seconds later, he and Gus were joined by one of our electricians, a man named Douglas. And George Travers, our inside foreman. Gus claims that after the scream, he saw a shadowy figure disappear into a passage off number 5 tunnel. He's sure it was the demon miner.
Where were the other two men?
Douglas and Travers were in number 5 tunnel, too, but at a considerable distance from each other.
Uh-huh.
You've got to find out what's in back of this, Casey.
Hmm.
The demon miner theory is ridiculous, of course, but it's ruined morale, cut production in half. Now that Adams' dying words apparently confirm the demon story, now we're in for further trouble.
Yeah. Well, just one more question, Bill.
Huh?
Like on previous occasions, was a large piece of roof rock found near the dead man's head?
Yeah. A slab of rock that'd take 3 or 4 big men to lift.
3 or 4?
Yes, Miss Williams. As in the other cases, Adams' hard hat had been crushed and his skull fractured.
What's a hard hat, Mr. Jerome?
Well, it's...
It's the miner's name for the protective helmet he's required to wear, Annie.
Oh.
Yeah. I know a little bit about mines and miners.
Hmm.
Library. Well, we'll go down to the mine, Bill, to Bristol level.
Yeah, I'll arrange for it right away. My inside foreman's waiting in the other office. George, come in, please.
Okay, Jerome.
Miss Williams, Mr. Casey, this is Mr. Travers.
How do you do, Mr.
Travers?
How do you do?
I don't know you. Nice to know you.
I've told you about these friends of mine, George. They want to get acquainted with Bristol level. I'd like you to be their guide.
Well, all right. Mr. Travers, what's your opinion of these accidents and the demon miner?
Same as mine, Casey. Both are phony.
Why don't you let me speak for myself, Jerome?
Well, George,
I never went to college like you, but I grew up around mines. My father was a miner in England. He's told me about strange, unexplainable things that happened there, and... Well, I'm not sure that there aren't demon miners.
Well, you're not serious.
You can quote me if you like. Miss Williams, Mr. Casey, I'll get you overalls, hard hats, and lamps.
Travers is a nice fellow, Casey, but he thought he should have had the job I got.
I see. Yes. I want to become better acquainted with Travers. Yeah. Meet Douglas, Eddie Bliss, and old Gus.
Planning interesting, well-balanced menus is hard enough at any time, and during Lent, it's doubly difficult. But here's one more occasion when Fire King Oven Glass comes to the rescue. All sorts of delicious, nourishing meals can be planned around a single big Fire King Oven Glass casserole dish. macaroni and cheese, baked with milk and covered with a magnificent crown of golden cracker crumbs. Old-fashioned New England baked beans with a rich brown molasses sauce, escalloped oysters, and literally hundreds of other mouth-watering main courses. Fire King Oven Glass is a must in American homes for these four all-important reasons. It simplifies the planning of meals. It simplifies housekeeping because it cuts dishwashing time by a full two-thirds. It saves the precious vitamins which are boiled out of foods in top of the stove cooking. And its cost, well, it's incredibly low. Ask for Fire King Oven Glass at your favorite chain, variety, hardware, or department store. Each piece is guaranteed for a full 2 years against oven breakage. Beautiful, practical, inexpensive Fire King Oven Glass is a product of Anchor Hawking. A great name in glass.
That's right, and we're going to return to Casey Crime Photographer, the Demon Miner, in just a little bit.
Yep. A couple things here. Casey was played by three people throughout his run, Matt Crowley, Stats Cotsworth, and for a brief time, believe it or not, Jim Backus played Casey. And throughout the run, most of it was of Ann Williams was Jan Miner. And it wasn't, she went on to do some other things after Casey, but she became more famous in the 60s as this.
I just came from a rummage sale, Madge.
Yeah, I was wondering where you got these hands.
Oh, it's dishwashing. What do I try?
Everything. And use palm olive dishwashing liquid. It softens your hands while you do the dishes. You're soaking in it.
In dishwashing liquid?
It's palm olive.
Mild?
More than mild. Makes loads of suds at last. And no kidding, palm olive softens hands while you do the dishes.
Madge! Madge!
That's right. She became Madge. Yep, she became Madge.
All right.
So there you go.
Dave, that is an excellent
fun little
bit
fact there.
Trivia. Thanks for bringing that
one
on.
One other thing about Alonzo Dean Cole, he produced 384 scripts for Casey Crime Photographer, and he wrote scripts for other shows as well, of course, doing all the Witch's Tales as well, but he also wrote scripts for The Shadow, Gangbusters, The Hour of Charm, The Kate Smith Hour, creating nearly 1,000 radio plays.
Gee.
It's just unbelievable.
Now that's a career.
Unbelievable. Yes. That's a career.
So. And if you stick with us long enough, we're going to play them all. Not tonight, but eventually.
I don't know if I'm going to live that long, Dale.
Yeah. Well, I guess we have to now.
Anyway.
Yep.
A couple of fun facts there I wanted to throw in there. Yep.
Yep, and we might as well wrap up Casey Crime Photographer. Here's the conclusion of The Demon Miner.
Now, the place where Frank Adams was killed is only a few hundred feet ahead now, Mr. Casey.
Ooh, we've really been... Golly, I never dreamed that coal mines had telephones in them and electric lights.
The lights aren't very bright.
Well, that's because coal dust settles on them.
Yeah. Well, where's the passage that Gus said this demon miner went into?
Over there. You can see it leading off just ahead.
Frank's place is right here.
In that dark hole?
Yes, Miss Williams. You must depend on our cap lights alone when we go in there. Well, let's go in. Granny, I'll help you. It's kind of rough going.
Okay, thanks.
Now, Frank and his helper had just blasted a face before he was killed. Naturally, the coals heaped all over. Jerome gave orders not to let anything be touched. Here we are.
Yeah. Show me where you found the dead guy.
There. You can see the bloodstain.
This the slab of rock that's blamed for the death?
Yes.
Must weigh half a ton, Casey.
Yeah, at least.
That you in there, Travers?
Yes, who?
It's me, Douglas. Super phoned down for me to meet you here.
Where's Eddie Bliss and old Gus?
How should I know? They supposed to be here, too?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, this is Miss Williams and Mr. Casey. Bert Douglas.
How are you doing, Mr. Douglas?
Look, if you're a cop, Mr. Casey, I might as well tell you right now. I don't know anything about those accidents.
You think they've been accidents, Douglas?
Well, I certainly don't believe in that demon miner stuff.
Maybe you have more sense if you do believe.
Well, here's old Gloomy Gus and Helper Reddy.
Hello, Mr. Travers. Hello, Douglas. Gus and I just got a message.
Mr. Casey here and Miss Williams want to have a talk with all of you. Eddie Bliss and Gus Hapsel.
How do you do?
All I know about the accident, Mr. Casey, is that poor Frank was lying there with Gus kneeling beside him when I come running in, and that big slab of roof rock...
That hunk of roof rock did not kill Frank Adams. It was the demon miner's peak that bust his head.
Ah, you're nuts, Gus.
Maybe he isn't, Douglas.
Say, Mr. Travers, you don't think...
I'm keeping an open mind.
Wonder how this got here.
Hmm?
What'd you just pick up out of that coal, Mr. Casey?
Nothing, nothing at all.
Casey?
It was something. You just stuck it in your pocket.
Yeah, I see you,
too. Never mind, we'll talk about it later. Well, now, there's no reason for me to keep you from your work. You can go ahead.
Go after we just got here?
Yeah, Douglas. Yes, I want to talk to all of you again about an hour from now.
Okay. Going down number 5, Eddie?
Yes, Douglas.
Come on. This is screwy, taking a guy off his job and...
You want to talk with me later, huh?
Yes, Gus.
All right. I go back to work.
Casey, I don't quite understand.
Look, I'd like to examine this place with Miss Williams alone, Mr. Travers, if you don't mind.
Well, you want me to go, too.
Yeah, if you don't mind. Only outside in the tunnel for a few minutes. I'll call you when I'm through here.
All right, I'll wait for your call.
What's this all about, Casey?
Annie, I want one of those four guys to get very nervous.
All of them seemed very nervous when they left just now. Yeah. What was it you picked up out of the coal?
Here, take a look.
A black... Powder puff.
It's just an ordinary powder puff covered with coal dust, Annie. And underneath the coal dust, when I ruffle it up
it's
like
full
this...
full of white powder.
Get it, Annie? The white face of the demon miner.
A man covered his coal-grimed face with white powder?
Sure.
And
then after he made his kill, all he had to do was to rub some coal dust on his face over the powder, and he could reappear almost instantly in his normal character.
Listen, all of those 7 men have been murdered, then.
I think so, Annie.
But how? Nobody could lift the huge rocks that crushed their skulls.
Annie, look. Couldn't the killer have bashed his victims with a hunk of rock that he could handle... and then have dragged the bodies over near another piece too big to handle, just to make things look like they weren't?
Uh-oh. But why were the murders committed? And who done it?
I don't know yet. Look, I'm going to call Travers back and leave you here with him. With the excuse that I want to explore some of those side passages alone, which I do. After that, I'm going to make whoever dropped that powder puff a very nervous guy.
You're back, Mr. Casey.
Yes, sorry, Travers. I had to keep you and Miss Williams waiting over an
hour.
Oh,
the time passed very quickly, Casey. Uh-huh. Mr. Travers here has been furthering my education about coal mines.
That's good. Mr. Travers, I'm going to throw a question at you. If the recent deaths here were really murders, whom would you suspect of committing them?
I think the man you should investigate is Douglas.
Hmm. Huh? Why?
Well, he's always got a chip on his shoulder. He doesn't like anybody. Nobody likes him.
Have you got anything real on Douglas?
No.
Okay, well, look, would you bring him in here, and old Gus and Eddie Bliss? I'd like to talk to all of you together.
All right, I'll be back with him just as soon as possible.
Annie, these boys seem to be playing a game, you know that? Each one trying to throw suspicion on the other.
Did you learn anything worthwhile from the others?
No. The killer knows he lost that powder puff, and he suspects that I found it in this pile of coal. So he's afraid, see? He's going to try to get it back. And to bump off the only two people who know about it.
You don't mean us.
Yeah, who else? Annie, switch off your cap light.
Oh, now, why?
Look, I want you to stay here in this corner in total darkness. I'll be at the other end of this little working where I can be seen.
Ooh.
Ah, don't worry. I'll be set for trouble, Annie. Go ahead, turn the light off.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but...
Now we wait.
All right. Hey, you know, Casey, I've been thinking about that powder puff.
Hmm.
It can account for the dead white face of the demon miner, but it doesn't explain the puffy cheeks and all that. Casey.
What?
That powder puff you found was mine.
What? Yours?
Of course I had one of that size in a pocket of these overalls before we came
Annie,
down here, and now it's gone.
Annie, for... Look, this means the whole idea is cockeyed. Why didn't you tell me?
Well, I didn't know it was gone till now. It never occurred to me to look until I just... Casey, do you hear that knocking?
I sure do.
That is the sound of a giant pick.
Annie, you stay here.
Don't leave me, Casey. It's coming closer. Oh, Casey, that face! Listen, this nothing isn't human. It is a demon. And look out, it's going to kill you.
Oh, it's not.
I'm okay, Annie. You only broke my cap light.
Yeah, but I can't see.
Annie's broken away from me. Turn on your light so I can see, will you?
Just a minute. I can't find the switch. Oh, there. I have it now.
Where is he?
Well, the thing seems to be gone.
Wait a minute. He ran back into the tunnel, Annie. I'm going after him.
Don't leave me.
You stay there.
Oh, gee. All right.
I didn't run into the tunnel. I was behind this pile of coal.
Don't you come any closer to me. Keep away. Don't.
Find us. Did the lady faint? Or did my fingers press too tight on her throat? We'll switch on a cap light so we can see.
What?
The lady's afraid when she sees my face.
Where have you brought me?
To an old working of the mine that's boarded up. No one but me knows that the boards can be moved like a door. I fixed them that way.
You're a man. You're not anything supernatural.
Look at me. These big cheeks. This wide mouth. Your friend Casey was trying to trap me. But he won't trap me. And to pay him for his meddling... You are going to die.
No!
Yes, after you're dead, he'll feel the pick in his skull. Only it's not a pick I use. It's a heavy rock. Like this! Oh, no! Please, don't!
He won't! It's okay, kid. I got our demon miner right on the button. I spotted this place when I was snooping around a while ago.
Casey, you know, you got here just in time.
Seems I did. Yeah, that rat's coming, too. Let's have a look at him.
Well,
let me go.
Casey, it's Eddie Bliss.
Yeah, meek little Eddie.
Yes, meek little Eddie. A guy without guts. That's what chumps have always thought me. 30 years I've worked in mines as a helper. They wanted to keep me just a shoveler of coal. A helper. I've shown them what I can do now. Little bosses like Frank Adams. And big bosses like the super. I made guys afraid to work here. Yes. I've killed. I'm the boss now. I'm the boss now.
Casey, they never sent him to the jail.
No, it's a squirrel's nest for Eddie.
There are still a few things I don't understand about this.
Well, I can explain them to you, kid, after I get a camera. I've got to take some pictures of this demon miner.
You know, I was brought up on a farm, and we used to figure we were pretty lucky, particularly when we thought of the people who lived in the cities. Why, all year round we enjoyed fresh food, fish from the lake below our farmhouse, caught through the ice in the wintertime, and fresh vegetables from the vegetable cellar, magnificent hams and sausages during the slaughtering time after Christmas. Well, now that I've become a city man myself, I find that there's no longer any need to envy the people back on the farm. Crystal clear, sanitary anchor glass containers bring you all the products of orchard, field, and stream packed at the very peak of perfection 12 months a year. And then, too, glass lets you see exactly what you buy before you buy it. Glass containers preserve their contents perfectly with no effect on taste or flavor. They're easy and safe to open and can be resealed to protect the unused portions. Anchor glass containers... and easy-to-remove anchor vacuum caps, so widely used for the packaging of foods of all kinds, are products of Anchor Hawking. A great name in glass.
I can see why heavy powder accounts for the guy having a white face in that dirty mine, Casey. But how did he make his cheeks so white?
Well, that was simple, Ethelbert. He used an old kid trick, stuffed a couple of walnuts in his mouth.
Which, of course, bulged out his cheeks, widened his mouth, and distorted his voice. But when Casey hit him...
Yeah, he coughed him out.
There's one more thing. The sound of that giant pick you heard.
Well, Eddie made that sound by bumping a rock drill against a wall. Boy... did we have luck in busting that case, Ethelbert? You know, Annie, since it was your powder puff that I found in that coal, I can't understand why Eddie made that risky attempt to kill us. He had no reason to believe that we had any evidence, and we didn't have. Boy, I'm a hot detective, Aura. Everything that I did was based on that powder puff, you know?
Casey.
Hmm?
I have a confession to make.
What's that?
I found my powder puff in my coat pocket. I didn't even take it in the mine.
You didn't?
Nope.
Ethelbert, what's this stuff I hear about a small-timer called Sherlock Holmes?
Prime Photographer, starring Stotts Cotsworth as Casey, is brought to you each Thursday by the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation, makers of Fire King Oven Glass, Anchor glass containers, Anchor caps and closures. All products of the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation. A great name in glass.
Thank you.
Prime Photographer is directed by John Dietz and features Miss Leslie Woods as Anne and John Gibson as Ethelbert. Eddie was played by Ted Osborne. Thursday night on CBS is the biggest show in town, so stay tuned for exciting dramatizations on Reader's Digest Radio Edition, which follows immediately over most of these stations. The Red Cross carries on for veterans, for military hospitals, and for all communities in time of disaster. You can help by giving generously now. This is Tony Marvin saying goodnight for the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation of Lancaster, Ohio, the world's largest maker of household glass. This is PBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Ah, yes, Hawking Glass, no longer in, they're no longer around because the name sounded like a cat coughing up a hairball. Eerie House Radio proudly presents A Garless Moral of the Story.
Okay.
With apologies to Gar. I'm not prepared. When mining, canary. There you go.
And yet we have a bonus Garless moral, too.
I hope this one flies a lot better. Eerie House Radio brazenly presents another Garless moral of the story.
Two morals in one. With apologies to Gar, some people are in fear of a demon miner. The rest of us have an ex-wife. There you go.
Ha ha! Eeny, meeny, chili beeny, the spirits are about to speak.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It never ends. It never ends.
You're soaking in it. There you go.
Yep.
As Madge would say.
Yeah, you're soaking in it. We're all about the retro here, gang. Don't remember too many movies with demons in them. I mean, devils, yeah. Demons are a little different. Of course, there's the great Lord of the Rings demon.
Yeah.
The Balrog. He was a demon.
There were a few demons, but yeah, most of them are portrayed as the devil itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Demons are just, I guess, awful underlings. I don't know.
I dated a few who were demons, but I don't know if that counts.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So which do you think is darker, Hall of Fantasy or Inner Sanctum? Because both have the opportunity.
The Hall of Fantasy is a darker. Plus, you know, they got to... You got to warm up those kettle drums for the Hall of Fantasy there.
True enough. So we should probably move on over next to one of my favorite programs, Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Dale, this is not your favorite Raymond, but this is your second favorite Raymond and basically the other guy who played him. I like Paul McGrath. He was a Broadway actor who turned to radio for a little bit more steady work. You made more on the stage when you could get it, but it was easier to get work on radio, and it was you didn't make as much. But it was steady work when you could get it. And knowing Hyman Brown, he didn't overpay anybody.
Yeah.
That's why he lost Raymond Edward Johnson. Of course, Raymond Edward Johnson went off to during World War II to fight. And when he came back, he was willing to take it. He really kind of had aspirations of hitting. Yeah, well, for our side, yeah.
Okay, good.
But he had aspirations for Hollywood, but he would play Raymond if he got a nice raise. Well, that infuriated High Brown, and he was never back again. Even when he came back with the Mystery Theater, Paul McGrath did... at least three, if not four, appearances on the CBS Radio Mystery Theater as a character actor. Raymond Edward Johnson, who was also an actor besides being host of Inner Sanctum, never was invited, even though there was a group of people in New Jersey that fought to get him the part of the host, and they heard he was bringing in the Mystery Theater. And I think I did okay with good old E.G. Marshall.
Yes, that's a whole nother thing and a whole nother show and a good one. I love CBS Radio Mystery Theater. That one, too, had a long run. And stick around. We're going to play them all.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my.
Here we are. Yes. Erie House 2040. Episode number 2706.
Hey, Dale, did you take today's reincarnation pill?
I know, right? Reincarnation. They make milk. Don't they in a can? Reincarnation? I don't know.
Yeah. My luck, if I got reincarnated, I'd come back as a pack of cigarettes, you know, because I never smoked one, so...
I'll be your friend. You know you'll have one friend.
There you go. That's all you need in life. One good friend. Of course, it wouldn't be a long life. Then I have to reincarnate into something else.
There you go.
Oh, my.
Wait a minute, Dale, my only friend. Let me try for the next life. I'm ready. See you, folks. It was a short stay. And as we fight our inner demons of comedy, let us move on then to Inner Sanctum. This one's called The Deaf Demon. originally broadcast?
July 5th, 1948.
Ooh. Inner Sanctum Mysteries, brought to you by Bromo Seltzer.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host, inviting you through the gory portals of the squeaking door for another soiree with some super-duper supernatural personality. And if you've never met a super-duper supernatural personality, aren't you the lucky one? Because they're devitalized people, usually somewhat dead, with transparent complexions and morbid imaginations. Would you like to become one? You won't have to worry about the high cost of living. And you'll never have to worry about dying, because once you're dead, that little matter will take care of itself. But, why don't I become one? I've got news for you. I am.
Tonight's Inner Sanctum mystery, Death Demon, was written by Milton Lewis and stars Everett Sloan in the role of Howard with Ann Seymour as Gilda, and is presented by the Emerson Drug Company of Baltimore, Maryland, whose registered pharmacists compound Bromo Seltzer, the headache product that fights headache three ways. Bromo Seltzer helps the pain of a headache quickly and pleasantly, and also helps the jittery nerves and stomach upset that may accompany a headache. No wonder in a recent representative nationwide survey, druggists report that of all headache products dispensed at their fountains, the overwhelming favorite is Bromo Seltzer.
All right, friends. Let's stop all this ghoulishness and let's get grim. Now remember our rule. Don't jump out of the window unless it's open. Ready now. Then listen as Howard Rhine tells us his strange story.
The wind was rising when I returned to Greystone Farms late that night. The house with its Victorian gables and towers looked like a clawing hand reaching into the scudding clouds. I went directly to my room, even though the living room was lit up. I had no desire to see my stepmother or the man she had married. The moment I got into my room and turned on the light, I gasped. My things had been disturbed. Many of them were gone. I ran down to the living room.
Come in, Howard. We want to talk to you.
I looked at this young woman, not more than 10 years older than myself, whom I called Mother. In the flickering firelight, she looked more beautiful than ever. But he was there, too. And I felt his voice cut across the room.
You needn't stare at her like that, Howard. She didn't take those things out of your room.
Who did, sir?
I did. Please stop this absurd trick of calling me sir. Do you like it or not, I'm your stepfather.
I'm sorry, sir, but my manner of addressing you is the politest I could think of.
Please, Howard.
Where are the things you took out of my room, sir?
Here.
You had no right to take them.
I told him to.
You?
For your own good, Howard. We were worried about you.
Were you really?
You've been ill. You know what the doctor said. What we found in your room justified all our fears. How long have you been reading these horrid books?
Ever since my father was murdered.
What do you expect to get out of them?
Perhaps, sir. I expected to find some way of reaching my father.
You know that's nonsense.
Is it?
Books on witchcraft. Necromancy. Morbid rubbish. I gave you credit for more intelligence, Howard.
This brooding about your father might destroy your mind.
And why should you care about that, Mother?
Because, I'm fond of you, Howard. I'm not your real mother, I know, but I tried to be one to you when your father was alive. I want to help you now.
Help? Then why don't you try to find out who murdered my father 2 years ago?
The police are doing everything they can. You think I've stopped trying?
Yes, Mother. I don't believe you even care who murdered your former husband. All you care about is him.
Now, see here, Howard.
It's true. I know it. I'm not a fool. The only reason you permit me to stay in this house is because my father's will compels you to take care of me, or you wouldn't have a penny of income.
Howard, you're hysterical. Can't you see what these books have done to you?
Perhaps you'd like to see what they've done for me, sir.
What are you talking about?
This morbid nonsense. What if I tell you that some of those things are true?
They can't be.
Someday I'll be able to talk to my father and find out who murdered him in his sleep. Perhaps I might be able to do it right now.
Right now?
You're frightened? You wouldn't like to see him again. This man you loved so deeply that you remarried a year after his death.
Stop it, Howard. Stop it.
And you're frightened too, aren't you, sir? And with good reason. I don't think you'd care to meet this man whose wife you stole.
Howard!
Would you like to see him?
I'm not afraid.
Then perhaps I shall make him appear.
What are you saying, Howard?
Do you know where I was all day, Mother? At my father's grave. And look, this earth. I've brought some of it back. This earth that's now mingled with his remains. Listen. That's Dane, my father's dog. Animals know when the dead are near. This time it will work, I'm sure. The signs are right.
What are you going to do?
Throw this earth into the fire and follow an ancient ritual to set loose the chained spirits of the dead. There!
Howard!
Did you see how the flames leap up, Mother?
The lightning struck that tree and knocked a branch through the window.
You're wrong. It's my father. Father! Where are you? Father! Didn't believe me, but I knew that at that moment my father came back to this earth. They were terrified, both of them, though they tried not to show it. That night I went to my room, listened to the storm howl itself out, but there was no further sign of my father. I must have slept, perhaps dreamed, because I heard a voice I hadn't heard in 2 years. I recognized it. Still thick with the accent he had acquired from his boyhood in Europe.
My son, wake up and find the person who murdered me. Wake up, my son, wake up.
The next thing I knew, I was rubbing my eyes. My room was full of mist, tinted a strange yellow gold by the murky moonlight that filtered through the windows. My father's dog, Dane, was tugging at my leg. He was trying to lead me out of the room. I followed him through the halls of that huge silent house to my father's study. It had been locked up since he died, and no one ever used it since. But when I tried the handle this night, the door opened, as though being pulled by some unknown force. Mist and moonlight crept into the study, lit the dust and cobwebs and shadowy furnishings with an eerie light. And then something crashed. A broken vase with a tiny key among its fragments lay on the floor. It might have been Dane who knocked over that vase, but I don't think so. I picked up the key. The moment I had it in my hand, I remembered a scene from my childhood. I had secretly observed my father remove a book from one of the cases, take out this tiny key and open a hidden panel in the bookcase. Like a man in a dream, I repeated the action. I removed the book, and there was the secret panel. I opened it with the key. There was nothing in it but a few large notebooks. I took them out, opened one, and by the flickering yellow light of my match, my father came back to me.
In this journal, I record thoughts that, if they remain unexpressed, might drive me mad. I know now that my wife, Gilda, is seeing another man. I know his name, Dale Barton.
Howard! Howard, open the door! Please!
What do you want, Mother?
Just to see you. I've been worried about you.
Really? Why?
You've been locked in this room for the last 2 days. Here, I have brought you some food.
Thank you. Where is your husband?
He had to drive to town. Howard, you can't go on like this.
You love him very much, don't you?
I wouldn't have married him if I didn't.
You love him more than you love my father?
Please, there's no point in discussing this. Your father's dead, and that's all past.
Not quite dead. In fact, he's very close to us at this moment.
Close?
Yes. So close that he can reach out and touch you.
Howard, let go of my hand.
You don't believe me, Mother.
This is all nonsense.
Is it? What would you do if I told you that my father is holding your hand this very minute? What would you do if I told you that he has taken possession of my body?
Howard, you're ill. You don't know what you're saying.
Did you know Dale Barton before my father was murdered?
No. I only met him after your father died.
You lie.
That's his voice.
You have been seeing Dale Barton for months. I know. I followed you.
No. No.
I talked to you about it the day before I died. You swore he meant nothing to you.
Let go of me. Let go.
Did you kill me?
No. No.
Answer me. Did you murder me? You once said you hated me.
Let go of me, please.
You said you loved me even on the day I was murdered.
You're hurting me.
Did you murder me? Was it because of him? Tell me.
Help me. He's going to murder me. Help me, someone.
Her, you crazy fool. What's going on here?
Dale, help me. He wants to kill me.
Howard, let go.
No, she's mine.
No.
Oh. Dale. Oh, Dale.
Come, Gilda. I'll take you out of here.
He led her out of the room while I lay on the floor. Had she murdered my father? Had he? I knew at last I had the means of finding out. There were thick vines outside my window, and late that night, as I had often done when I was a boy, I carefully, quietly climbed down them, stopping at a point outside their window. I clung to the wall like a bat, and I heard them talking.
Did you hear his voice?
You don't actually believe.
I don't know what to believe. He looks so much like his father. When he sees me, spoke to me, it was his father.
Julie, you're being foolish about this.
Am I? On the day William was murdered, Howard was away at college. How could he have known what we talked about? And he did know. That boy seemed to know every word. That boy, or is he his father?
Gilda, do you know what you're saying?
Yes, this isn't an ordinary thing. There's nothing you can do about it.
Oh, yes, there is.
I climbed back to my room to think. I dared not go to sleep because I knew my father had been murdered in his sleep. And if they had murdered him, they'd certainly have an excellent reason to kill me. I thought of running away, but then I would never find out. I know now why I couldn't run away. My father within me was holding me there. I lay down on my bed to rest. And then suddenly, I found myself dreaming that a pair of powerful hands were clutching at my throat. I struggled, gasped for breath, tried to scream. I was being murdered in my sleep just as my father was. I tore at those iron fingers, clawed at those hands that were cutting off my life. And then I opened my eyes and discovered that it was not a nightmare. I hadn't been dreaming. It was real.
I was being murdered!
You are listening to Inner Sanctum, brought to you by... Right now, after all the excitement of the 4th of July, I'll bet lots of people have holiday headaches. If you're one of those unhappy folks, I'll tell you how to get fast headache help. Just take a sparkling, refreshing glass of Bromo Seltzer. You'll find that Bromo Seltzer fights headache three ways fast.
First, Bromo Seltzer helps the pain of a headache and does it quickly and pleasantly.
Second, Bromo Seltzer helps calm, jumpy, jangled nerves.
Third, Bromo Seltzer helps soothe an upset stomach.
And since stomach upset and jittery nerves may team up with an ordinary headache, it makes a lot of sense to insist on Bromo Seltzer, the headache help that's famous for fighting headache three ways. Bromo Seltzer is a favorite help all year round because it's so refreshing and pleasant tasting. Ask at your druggist's fountain or counter for speedy, economical...
Hey, and your favorite headaches have returned. It's me and Dave. We have completed part one of Death Demon from Inner Sanctum. Dave, you're back with us, aren't you? Here, let me disconnect them and bring them back. In the meantime, hope you guys are enjoying this. As Fogsbane mentioned in the chat, it is kind of intense all the way through. Rob Smith Jr. joined us in the chat as well. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And Dave will be back with us soon. We might as well just run right in to the conclusion of Death Demon. Inner Sanctum.
Well, friends, your breathing spell is over. Now it's time to lose your breath again, so let's get back to our story. Now, what did we do with the call? Oh, yes. We were interrupted while we were making one. And if you remember, the corpse belonged to Howard Ryan, the young man who was telling us this story. He had just discovered that his dream had come true, and someone was choking him to death. That's a nice way to wake up from sleep, isn't it? Well, let's have Howard tell us what happened.
My eyes focused through the haze, and I recognized Dale, my stepfather. They were his hands that were around my neck. Suddenly, I heard Dale bark, and the door flew open, and like a writhing cannon shell, the dog flew through the air at the throat of my stepfather. A moment later, I felt his hands release me as he shouted up. Don't hold on. Just kill me. I can't get...
For a moment, I did nothing. I knew I wanted him to die. But I still wasn't sure if he had killed my father. I suppose I was a fool, but I yelled...
Dane! Stop it! Down, Dane! Down! Here, Dane! Come here!
Who opened the door? I want to get out of here.
Not yet.
Why? Are you going to turn that dog loose on me again?
Perhaps.
You want to kill me?
You tried to kill me.
Kill you? Have you lost your mind completely?
I woke up with your hands around my throat.
You're insane. I was trying to pick you up from the floor.
You're lying!
I'm not. I heard you moaning and screaming, and I came up to see what was wrong. I found you on the floor. You were having a nightmare.
Was I?
Of course. Why should I want to kill you?
Because I may find out how you murdered my father. What he said could have been true. I had had little sleep for a long time, and his attack on me could have been a nightmare. I could never be certain. But to protect myself, I kept a gun with me at all times. I read and reread the journals of my father, which I had found. More and more often, it was his voice that came out of my mouth, his thoughts that filled my mind. And then came the night when I found out the truth.
Good evening, Howard.
What are you doing in my room, sir?
I came to have a talk with you.
Dane! Dane!
There's no use calling for your dog. You'll never see him again.
What did you do with him?
It should have been done long ago.
What? What have you got there?
A knife. And it's quite sharp. Quite suited to the purpose I intended for.
You came to kill me. Did my mother put you up to this?
No. As a matter of fact, your stepmother is in town right now. We two are quite alone.
I see.
You've always hated me, haven't you, Howard?
Yes, sir.
I suppose you can't help it. Your stepmother's a very beautiful woman.
She has nothing to do with us.
Makes very little difference. The fact of the matter is that you become dangerously psychopathic. I want you to know that I've taken steps to have you confined.
Oh, so that's the game, sir. You're going to kill me and tell the authorities you were protecting yourself from a homicidal maniac.
I'm glad you're aware of your disadvantages.
But you're not aware of yours.
A gun.
Did you murder my father?
What are you going to...
Did you kill me?
Who? Who's speaking?
Answer me. Did you murder me?
Who are you? What are you?
Answer me.
If I'll answer you, I'll kill you.
Don't. Speak before you die. Did you murder me in my sleep? I have got to know now.
Murder you.
Did you? Did you?
But he never spoke again. My father, using my body, had murdered him.
Howard, have you seen Dale?
Yes, Mother.
Where is he?
Come in. He's in here.
Howard, you murdered him.
Yes, when he tried to throw that knife at me, you see, he still has it in his hand.
Howard.
Don't try to get away.
Let me out of here.
No, Mother.
And don't call me Mother. You're no son of mine. You're a murderer.
Yes, Mother, but less of a murderer than you are. At least I killed in self-defense. Not when my victim was asleep, helpless, and unaware of danger.
Let me out of here.
No, you're going to stay.
Oh.
Yes, this gun. The same gun I used to murder your husband.
Oh.
Stay just where you are.
Why?
Because I want you to see this man who succeeded my father. This creature whom you love. Look at him there, Mother. Twisted grotesquely into the whining coward he proved himself to be in death. Look at him. This is the man you gave up my father for. This is the man you committed murder for.
Let me go.
No, look. This is the man who used his last breath to betray you.
Betray me?
Yes.
How?
He said that you killed my father.
I?
Yes.
It's a lie.
Is it, Gilda?
William.
Is it?
Yes, I didn't murder you.
I mean to know the truth. Do not think this is some trick played by my son. I am William. I know things which only you and I in all the world know.
Stop it.
Tell me the truth.
Don't point that gun at me.
Your only chance is to tell me the truth.
Will you let me live?
It will depend on what you tell me.
Then why should I tell you?
Because I am your husband, who once loved and trusted you, Gilda. Tell me. Tell me now, or you will die.
Very well. I did it. I committed the murder. That's what you wanted to hear, is it? That's what you wanted me to tell you, is it?
It is what I wanted to know.
What are you going to do?
What do you think I should do?
Let me live. I've loved you. I've always loved you. It wasn't my fault. He put me up to it. Now that he's dead, I realize what I've done.
Do you?
Yes. Let me live. Let me live.
Perhaps I shall, Mother.
Howard. Oh, you understand, don't you? It's just as it happened with you and your father. So it happened with Dale and myself. You won't do anything to me, will you? I'm not your real mother, I know, but I have loved you, Howard. You know I've loved you, and I still love you.
Tell me one thing. Was he as guilty as you?
Yes. Yes, it was really all his fault.
Then come with me, Gilda. We're going to the police. And that's what happened, Inspector. She finally confessed. And I brought her here.
Have you anything to say, ma'am?
Yes, Inspector.
Well?
Everything I told my stepson, every word of my confession was a lie.
Mother!
This boy's insane. He's been out of his mind ever since his father was murdered. I only made that confession to humor him and save my life. And I can prove what I say. More than one doctor has found him unbalanced.
I believe you, ma'am.
Inspector, you can't. This woman murdered my father. She told
me. We know who murdered your father, son. It was not this woman. He picked up a man yesterday. He confessed, gave us all the details. They all checked with the evidence. His name is Ralph Stone, criminal with a long record. And he murdered your father for money.
Then it wasn't my mother.
No, it wasn't your stepmother, no. It was her husband, Dale Burton. We learned that he hired this Ralph Stone to commit the murder.
Then I was right. My father knew what he was doing when he made me pull that trigger.
I wonder, son. Because you're under arrest for murder.
I kept telling them that I didn't murder Dale Barton. I didn't pull that trigger. It was my father who murdered him. They don't believe me. But it has to be right, you see. How could father have known Dale was guilty without supernatural knowledge? My father still lives inside of me. And sometimes he talks.
Well, friend, there's nothing wrong with little old Howard. Just a little bit nuts, but who isn't? And how'd you like someone to possess you someday? Just think, you could lead a double life for the price of a single. In fact, you may be able to save money because, as everybody knows, two can live cheaper than one. Which brings us to the moral of tonight's story, taken from the croonings of Nature Girl, who warbles, "Don't drop dead except in bed, otherwise you can break your head."
It's common knowledge, I suppose, that jittery nerves can help to cause a miserable headache. And it's almost as well known, I think, that Bromo Seltzer can help a headache in short order, even when that headache is accompanied by jangled nerves or stomach upset. Because Bromo Seltzer not only helps the headache, but helps calm the jumpy nerves and stomach upset at the same time. The makers of Bromo Seltzer have just received a letter from Mrs. Helen A. Haas of Mount Vernon, New York, in which she said,
"I've used Bromo Seltzer many times. As director of a children's dramatic school, many times jumpy nerves bring on a headache. But thanks to your fine product, a headache no longer creates a problem."
Thank you, Mrs. Helen Haas. You pointed out once again what millions of smart men and women know. Bromo Seltzer fights a headache quickly and helps calm jumpy nerves, too. What's more, it's so pleasant tasting, it's actually refreshing. Caution, use only as directed. If headaches persist or recur, see your doctor. But for ordinary headaches,
fight headache three ways.
Creepy.
Well, it's time to close that squeaking door for another 7-day rest. Until next week at this time, when Bromo Seltzer brings you another Inner Sanctum mystery directed by Hyman Brown. Oh, by the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is Report for a Corpse by Henry Kane. Next week's tale is titled Death is a Magician. A guy loses his girl, loses his mind, and meets a magician named Marco. Now, Marco makes an easy mark of our hero, and in turn, our hero uses Marco for target practice in a marathon murder. Marco, you see, just won't stay dead.
Spoiler alert.
Don Scramble. See us next Monday, friends, and we guarantee to scramble you some, too. Until then, good night. Pleasant dreams.
This is Dwight Wiest inviting you to tune in again next Monday at this same time to Inner Sanctum, which is brought to you for your entertainment every Monday right through the summer by...
That's too creepy.
This is CBS, where 99 million people gather every week, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
I almost
must
rather
be a big
have
room.
Yeah, I almost would rather have the headache. Freaking thing.
So is my mic working now? Is my mic working
now? It is
now?
Working now, yes. Glad to have you back.
So with that, we can learn something besides the moral he gave us. We have another moral
we
could have learned.
And if dogs had wings, they'd fly. Wait, here we go. Good heavens. Eerie House proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story. Ouch.
Wow. Apologies to Gar. I think I'm deaf. So this guy was his own father. Big deal. According to the record, Guy Lombardo was his own grandpa. Okay.
Both being from Kentucky.
Hey, before my mic, I was going to say, before my mic so crudely cut me off in the last segment there, never came on, the little bit about Everett Sloan, who was the star of tonight's show. He was best known for playing Mr. Bernstein in Orson Welles' classic Citizen Kane in 1941. Now, after the stock market crash in 1929, he turned to radio for employment as an actor. His voice won him steady work. He even became the voice of Adolf Hitler in the March of Time serials. He was all over the place from, let me look here, from Studio One to Inner Sanctum to Cavalcade of America. So many stories, so many shows. In addition to his, he also did some movie work and other television work. One of the television roles he had is one I'm familiar with. He was an executive in a TV screen version of Rod Serling's Patterns in 1956. I think that may have won Rod his first Emmy Award. And in addition to his movie work in TV, he directed several episodes of TV programs and did voiceover work in cartoon series, The Dick Tracy Show in 1961, and Johnny Quest in 1964.
Awesome!
Plagued with failing eyesight, a depressed Sloan quit acting and eventually took his life at the age of 55 years old.
Dagnabbit.
Sad ending to a very, very talented actor, voice actor, TV actor, movie actor, and stage actor as well.
Trapped. In any event, we got yet another fine tale for you tonight. And this one, we saved those dark demon drums for last from the Hall of Fantasy. What a nice title this one has.
Yes.
Demon of the Night.
Yep. And we're going in succession. The Casey was 47, Inner Sanctum was 48. And this particular episode of Hall of Fantasy was from April 4th, 1953.
And now for our story. An original tale of fantasy by Richard Thorne entitled The Demon of the Night. Two ways of looking at it. Either one believes that they died accidentally from natural causes, or else we have to admit that there was something in the darkness,
waiting for them. Waiting for anyone who'd be unsuspecting enough to walk alone at night. I leave it up to you. Decide for yourself whether Raphael Sebastian was a maniacal killer, or whether he was what so many people have called him, a creature of the darkness, spawned in the mind of evil in the darkness of night, running at all fours to leap upon his unsuspecting victim. He came to our town on the midnight train. Why I happened to be there at the station, I attribute to restlessness. Sheriff Craig was there, too. Who's that? Ken Parker, Sheriff.
What are you doing down here?
I couldn't sleep.
She's right on time.
Yeah.
Why'd you come down here?
I don't know. Figured I might as well walk down to the station and see who might be getting off the midnight train.
Then you knew he was coming tonight.
Who was coming?
Sebastian.
You mean the man who bought the old Glaymore place?
That's right.
No, I didn't. I'm kind of anxious to see you. It was funny the way he bought the place, wasn't it?
Yeah. Calling up at night when the real estate office was shut down. Having old Matt Ryerson describe the place to him over the phone. Then mailing a check from him. Kind of interested in you. I mean, the way you bought the old Glaymore place and everything. I wanted to see the man who bought it over the telephone. And besides, I couldn't sleep.
Who told you I was coming?
Old Matt Ryerson, the real estate agent.
And you, Mr. Parker, why did you come down?
I don't know, Mr. Sebastian. I guess I couldn't sleep either.
Well, it's rather late. You should not... Oh, here he comes. I must talk to him about being late. It's been very pleasant meeting you, gentlemen. I hope that we may meet again quite soon.
Thank you, Mr. Sebastian. I imagine we'll be seeing you around.
I imagine you will, Sheriff. Good night.
All right.
I got a funny feeling about that man, Ken.
How do you mean?
I can't explain it. His eyes look sort of funny. And his hands. Did you notice his hands?
Yes, I did.
Notice how they were just covered with hair? Thick and furry, just like an animal.
I was a little surprised that the sheriff had fastened upon the same things I had. There was only one light on the deserted station platform, but Raphael Sebastian had stopped directly beneath it while he waited for his car. There was something strange about his eyes. But the thing which had sent an unaccountable tremor of fear through me was his hands. They were small hands, graceful and well-formed. They were covered with a thick coating of hair, and as Craig had said, they did remind one of the fur of an animal. Perhaps I should mention that I own the paper in this small town we live in. It was always news to us to note the departures and arrivals in the town. So I knew that Saturday, when the Gazette came out, it would have an item about Sebastian's arrival. Both Sheriff Craig and I lived in the outskirts of the town. So I drove him back to his house and stopped in for a cup of coffee.
I hope you don't mind it being a little strong.
That's the way I like it, Sheriff.
Sue always makes it so weak I can't stand to drink the stuff. Tastes like dirty dishwater. Cream and sugar?
No, I like it black.
Appreciate the flavor, huh?
Mm. So do I.
Paper getting along all right?
Mm-hmm.
You've been doing a good job since your father died, Ken. I didn't...
Listen.
Yeah, I hear it.
Must be a dog.
Ain't no dog. No dog ever howls like that.
And what is it?
Haven't been any of those critters anywhere near here in a long time.
You mean that's a wolf?
That's what it is. Shot a lot of them when I was young.
Probably out looking for food.
Maybe.
There it is again.
And it gives you the creeps, don't it?
A little.
Sounds like a big one. Maybe we'd better go up.
What was that?
I don't know. It sounded like a window breaking. Isn't any mistake in that sound? That was a scream. Come on.
Right. The only other house out here is Widow Brady's.
Scream must have come from there, then. Don't see any lights on.
That definitely came from her house. I know it.
Mrs. Brady!
Maybe the door is unlocked.
No, no, she always leaves it locked.
Mrs. Brady!
Listen, that sounds like an animal. Come on. We're going to break this door open. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. And together.
Let's do it again.
She's sleeping on the first floor bedroom. Just follow me.
Mrs. Brady.
The light's right here. Brady. Some animal must have been in here. Look at her. It's...
What a horrible way to die.
We'll return to the tale of the Demon of the Night in just a moment. Now to the Hall of Fantasy and the tale of The Demon of the Night. I have stopped at Sheriff Craig's house for a late cup of coffee. We'd just returned from the station in our first meeting with Raphael Sebastian. The scream had echoed in the night. We raced outside to see what was wrong. What we found was death.
That wolf again.
You think that wolf killed Mrs. Brady?
That's what it looks like, doesn't it?
What are you going to do?
That animal's got to be killed. That's what I'm going to do.
Craig went out by himself that night in an attempt to track the animal. But though the tracks were quite clear outside the broken window, it was impossible to follow them. By morning, a light rain had sprung up, and all traces of the tracks disappeared. I was at the paper the following day, getting everything ready to go to press.
Ken!
Oh, Alice, I'm sorry, darling. I didn't see you come in.
I'm beginning to feel jealous of that typewriter. What are you writing now?
Well, the story of what happened last night.
It's already all over the town.
Yes, I know. But they'll read about it just the same.
Matt Ryerson told me that an animal had killed Mrs. Brady.
That's right.
He said something about a big wolf. Is that true?
As far as Craig and I know.
Oh, they'd better catch the animal and kill it, Ken. The town's getting panicky.
Well, Craig was going to trail it, but when the rain came this morning, there wasn't any trail to follow.
Oh, it's not raining now.
Well, don't you see, Alice? The rain washed tracks away.
You two talking over your marriage plan?
No, Sheriff. We were talking about what happened last night.
I thought you might be different. The whole town's talking about that.
Anything new, Sheriff?
Not a thing. Town's getting all head up about it. I don't like it.
Anything I can do for you, Sheriff?
Hey, Ken, I'm going out to see that Sebastian fella. Want to come along?
Of course.
Sebastian?
Came in last night on the midnight train.
What are you going out to see him for?
Just to see him, that's all.
Craig and I went out to his car, got in, and drove out to the old Glaymore mansion. It was a few miles out of town, well back from the highway. We turned into the gravel road that led to the house.
It'll be pretty nice to see this old place fixed up. Certainly gone to ruin since Glaymore died.
It will be nice to see it fixed up, but I...
But what?
Yeah, I don't know. This killing's got me down.
Don't worry, Craig. You'll get the wolf.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, we're here. Now, let's go.
All right.
All that rain this morning has certainly turned into a nice day.
Kind of a day I like to go fishing.
Yeah, me too.
I guess that servant of his must have come out early to get the house in order. He was the knock again.
Good afternoon, Sheriff.
Afternoon, Mr. Sebastian.
Are you here on business?
A little.
Won't you come in, then?
Thanks. You certainly cleaned it up in here.
My servant, Carlos, was here for some time. Sit down if you will, huh? Now, what can I do for you?
Last night, when you were driving out here, did you see or hear anything?
I don't understand. Like a wolf. A wolf.
That's right.
No, I didn't. Why do you ask?
We had a killing in town last night.
You mean someone was murdered?
Yes. By a wolf. At least that's what we think it is.
What happened? Was someone out walking?
No, the wolf broke through a window to enter the house.
Oh, that sounds impossible to believe.
Yeah, I know. I just want to warn you, living way out here the way you do, to make sure you have plenty of protection.
Huh. Do not worry, Sheriff. I am able to protect myself. Did the animal leave any trail?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, but I couldn't follow it in the dark. And when it was light enough to see, a storm started and washed out the tracks.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, you keep your eyes open, Mr. Sebastian.
I will, Sheriff.
Come on, Ken, let's go.
And that's Hall of Fantasy Part 1.
Yep.
The Demon
yep.
of the Night.
Here's an interesting quote from radio historian John Dunning. He wrote a reference to this story, Hall of Fantasy, or not the story, the series Hall of Fantasy, in his book, Tune In Yesterday. The difference between this program and its competitors was that here, man was usually the loser. The supernatural was offered as something respectable, awesome, sometimes devastating, and always frightening. So, so man against
and,
everything there and everything else won. Yeah.
Later on, we'll talk about maybe some good demon movies if we have a little extra time, because we might. This last segment of Hall of Fantasy is a little on the brief side, so we'll maybe have
yep.
some time for shit chat and maybe even a few or one or two features, a little extra.
Cool.
Audio bonus from Old Time Radio.
Fabulous. Sounds like fun. I think I'll stick around.
I think I will, too. They make us. They're holding us hostage. It's the conclusion of Demon of the Night from the Hall of Fantasy.
We went outside, got into the car, and started back to town. We'd driven for about 5 minutes before I realized that something was different about Sebastian. I think Sheriff Craig realized it at the same time. Sheriff?
What?
I just thought of something.
So did I.
You noticed his hands?
Yeah. That's what I was thinking, too.
There was no hair on them at all. I thought we must have been mistaken the night before, but then I wasn't so sure. Both Sheriff Craig and I had seen his hands the night before. Both of us couldn't be mistaken. We didn't have much time for further speculation, however. I had to get back to the paper. I was behind in my work, and I had to make up for lost time. About 8 o'clock that evening, Alice came down to help me. We worked steadily until almost 11.
Your office?
Yeah. What time is it?
Oh, almost 11.
Well, I'd better get you home. Finish up in the morning.
Well, I can go home alone if you want to stay here, Ken.
No, Alice, I don't want you off in the streets now. Not where there's any chance of that animal returning. Let's go.
I've never seen the town look so deserted at 11 o'clock.
They're all afraid.
Oh, look, there's Sheriff Craig.
The sheriff.
Hello, Ken.
I see you're wearing two guns, Sheriff.
That's right. Not going to take any chances. You walking Alice home, Ken?
Yes.
Well, I might as well go along with you. Everybody must be staying inside.
No, not everybody, Sheriff. Look up there. Isn't that Matt Ryerson?
I can't see too well. We need more streetlights in this town.
Listen.
Yes, I heard it. I don't like this.
No, no, it's running away now. I missed him, doggone it. Matt. Matt, are you all right?
A wolf with a human face. A wolf. No.
He's dead.
Did you hear what he said, Ken? He said a wolf with a human face.
You are listening to the tale of the Demon of the Night on this week's journey down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy. We'll return to our story in just a moment. Back now to our story, an original tale of fantasy by Richard Thorne entitled The Demon of the Night. Craig and I were walking out his home. It was after 11 and the streets were deserted and dark. Old Matt Ryerson lay on the ground where he had fallen after the attack. Before our eyes, he died.
Did you hear what he said, Ken? He said a wolf with a human face.
I heard what he said. That thing out there in the darkness, whatever it is, it's got to be killed.
What do you mean, Sheriff? Whatever it is.
Just what I said.
You think it's something besides a wolf?
Well, I don't know for sure.
What are we going to do with him?
There's nothing much we can do. Isn't a pretty sight, is it? I guess I'll call Simmons. Then we'll drop you off, Alice.
And then what?
You'll come along, Ken. Then you and I'll follow the trail of that killer.
Thing that it did rain. Ground's pretty soft. Makes the trail easier to follow.
We've been out for almost 3 hours.
I know. I wonder if that critter knows what's following it.
Aren't you endowing it with the faculty of reason?
Maybe.
No animal is capable of reasoning.
That's where you're making a mistake. All animals can reason a little, and I know one that can reason a lot.
There's only one animal. You mean a man?
That's right, a man. A man that can take on the form of a wolf.
That's not possible.
You should listen to my wife talk. She can tell you some stories that will make the hair on the back of your neck stand up.
A man that assumes the form of a wolf, that's only legend, folk belief.
You figure it your way. I'll figure it mine. That critter's getting closer to us.
You sure?
Of course I am. We aren't tracking it anymore. It's tracking us. Maybe you've been wondering why I'm carrying two guns tonight.
Well, here, one of them is for you. Thanks.
We better stop. You notice which way we've been traveling?
North.
That's right. And what lies north of the town?
Nothing, except the old Claymore place.
That's where we've been heading. We aren't more than a half a mile away from it.
You're really serious in believing that we're dealing with a werewolf.
Dead serious. Listen. Heard something. Keep your eyes open.
I can't see anything.
Don't talk. Just shoot. Just look. Out.
There it is.
I see it.
You hit it.
We might as well stop. No sense shooting at the shadows. It's too far away by now. Did you notice which way we're going?
North.
Yeah, just about a half a mile towards the old Glaymore place. You and me, we're going there too. We're going to pay Mr. Sebastian a visit. Shine your light again. Yeah, that's right. There's the blood spot again. got any doubts now where the trail ends? It's only 25 feet away from us.
Look, the paw prints end here.
That's right. And you see the bare footprints of a man. Now, do you believe me?
I guess so.
Now, when we get inside, you let me do most of the talking.
All right.
Use the knocker.
Right.
I wonder who'll answer the door, Sebastian or his servant.
We don't have long to find out. I think someone's coming.
Yes?
Oh, it's you, Sheriff Craig. And Mr. Parker, what can I do for you, huh?
We'd like to come in and talk a spell.
Well, it's rather late.
What I have to say won't keep...
Well, then, come in.
How come your servant didn't open the door?
He left my employ.
I guess I must have missed him when he took the train.
Yes, you must have. We can talk here.
I see you have a bandage on your hand. Did you hurt it some way?
I caught it. So, what do you want to talk to me about?
About two killings. And I think maybe a third.
What do you mean?
The old woman that was killed last night, Widow Brady. You didn't know her. And Matt Ryerson, he was killed tonight. And your servant, when did he die?
You're insane.
No, we're not, Mr. Sebastian. First time I looked at your hands, I knew there was something wrong about you. They're covered with hair, just like the hair of a wolf. But they're only covered at night, not in the daytime.
You don't know what you're talking about.
And you didn't cut your hands, Sebastian. We shot you when you tried to attack us tonight.
You have no proof, Craig. You're accusing me of being a shapeshifter, a werewolf. You don't expect people to believe you, do you?
I don't care what they believe. We know what you are. We're going to see that you can't kill anyone else.
You don't think that you can stop me, do you, Craig? Huh?
Look at his hands, Sheriff. They're
changing. Yes, look at me, Craig. Wait, and we shall see who you will tell. Now, use your gun and dump it.
Wouldn't be making a mistake about that.
No. Sebastian is dead. I'll never forget what I saw. Right before our eyes, he changed. First into an animal, and then as he was dying, back into a man.
You'd better forget it if you know what's wise. People aren't going to believe you now that he's dead. If he was alive and the murders went on, then they'd believe you. But not now. Officially, I killed Sebastian in the line of duty for the murder of three people. Unofficially, and you and I know the truth, I killed a wolf who was the demon of the night.
Hoot, 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 hoot. Hoot.
Uh-oh. Never know when one is going to get hooted at.
No, but one does know when it can make it sick. Immortal.
Didn't mean to cut you off there, brother, but it is time for Eerie House's Garrulous Moral of the Story.
It's me. Okay. With apologies to Gar. If you see a wolf that has a human face, then it's either time to give up the hooch or else drink more.
There you go. Or my ex-wife.
Dun, dun, dun. That would be scary.
Three, count them, three fun tales, and yet we got time for more, I suppose.
We do. Hey, I did find this one ad from 1940, Dale, about the new Federal Recorder, the only popular price recorder with these seven special features. Seven, count them. Let me go over here so I can read it a little better.
I'm going to count
them. All right, are you ready for this? Now, remember, this is 1940, okay? Go ahead.
All right.
Give me the number. I'll give you the... Go ahead, give me the number. You go. You count down the numbers.
Seven.
Start with one. No, start with one. Yeah.
Okay. Special feature number one.
Built-in radio for recording off the air. This is 1940.
1940. Special feature number two.
Operates at two speeds, 33 and one-third and 78 RPM.
Special feature number three.
Built-in mixer for two microphones.
Special number four.
Special amplifier circuit permitting off-air and microphone recording simultaneously.
Special feature number five.
An overhead feed mechanism guaranteed positive and uniform cutting.
A special feature number six.
A 17-pound steel alloy turntable eliminating all possible of wows and wavers.
Just to make sure you're prepared. Da, comrade. Special feature number seven. The biggest one.
Checked for uniform tone, quality, and consistent speed by Conchromatic Stroboscope, which measures sound to 1/100th of a semitone. All this is yours for $199.50. I borrowed Gar's Garculator earlier this week, and I hadn't returned it to him yet before he became ill. And if you were to buy that same piece today, it would cost you $3,815.58.
That's right. And that
was a lot of money back then.
Even though we swiped your Garculator, we does love you, brother, and you can get well soon because you got to come back and do your horrible horror starring Garda Gold like you usually do after our show on Saturdays when we start at 6:30 and end at 8. Then it's time for Garda Gold.
That's right. That's right.
But we will be here tomorrow at 6:30. We'll tell you more about that in a little bit.
Are you threatening them again?
Yes, I am. All right, I'm going to just pull a Fonzie. I'm going to smack the side of the jukebox and play a tune real quick.
Ready?
Cool.
What's next in the program?
Well, here, as I promised, is Merv Griffin, assisted by the Martin Men, singing the praises of Joanne.
More terrific than Joanne.
counter charms upon your fingers, you need more than 10. How do I spell wonderful?
J-O-A-N-N. Stars that shine above, nor the facts of love. They say no one's more terrific than Joanne, 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 Joanne.
Believe it or not, Merv Griffin, ladies and gentlemen.
Whenever I think of Merv Griffin, I think of Rick Moranis on Second City TV. He's seen doing Merv Griffin, then he just look at camera, like every few seconds, say, "Ooh, we'll be right back." And on his gravestone, he has Merv Griffin. We won't be right back.
Yes. That's true. Oh, I just saw that recently. I couldn't believe it. We will not be right back.
We will not be right back. Yes.
Good to go out with a sense of humor.
It is. It is. He had the money. Heck, he could have lived just off the royalties, not only from the game shows he created, but just the Jeopardy theme. My goodness.
Yeah. The man was great. So real quick, some demon movies. This is from Hell Horror. I don't agree with all of these. Real quick, I'm going to try to zip through the top 25 demon movies. 25, Wreck, 2007. Never saw it. Devil's Advocate, number 24. That's actually the devil, I thought. Al Pacino was the devil, if I'm not mistaken. That also featured Keanu Reeves and Charlize Theron. Army of Darkness, number 23. Yeah, that's a demon. The dark side of Bruce Campbell. Dante's Inferno. Haven't seen it, from 1911. Ooh, when I start with Silent
Journey. That's his journey through hell, so that would be the devil, I would think.
Yeah, but there could be demons on the way to hell. Anything for Jackson? Haven't seen it. Ah, The Omen, 1976. Again, is that not just the devil? We wanted demons here. Demons are like underlings of the devil, I always thought. Here's one that fits the bill. An old film with Sam Neill called Possession from 1981. A young Sam Neill.
Yeah.
90 seconds left. Angel Heart is number 18. They put the Conqueror Worm at number 17. There's another name for that. I forget the name, but of Witchfinder General, it's also known as. Spirits of the Dead, number 16. That was from 1968. Hellboy. Yes, there are demons in Hellboy. The Conjuring 2, The Enfield Poltergeist. Haven't seen it. Black Cat, 1934. Very good film, but not too much in possession. Let's just skip a few and get to the top ones. Nightmare on Elm Street, yes. Freddy's a bit of a demon. The Babadook, absolutely. You got to see The Babadook, Dave. Poltergeist, yes. Exorcist, number one. I would agree. So tomorrow night, we're back with two more demon tales. The heck are they? Oh, Sherlock Holmes, the demon barber of Seville. And Arch Obler plays Visitor from Hades. So that's tomorrow night, 6:30 Eastern. See you then. Goodbye. Well, Vince, where are you hiding there, brother? Come on. Come on. Well, no, Vince. All I guess we can wrap this up with is simply to say...
Yes, it was all about dreams.
It was.
Yes, it was all about dreams.
There we go.
It's out.
I couldn't scroll over there. I got a new mouse, so I don't know if you can tell. I was struggling a little bit with that.
Yeah.
Because I'm not accustomed to it. A new mouse and a keyboard. And it's cool. It lights it up in all these colors.
Oh, it's one of those gaming keyboards, huh?
I guess it is. But it's very heavy duty, which I can use because I tend to type hard. I do things vigorously,
you know. There were a couple of silent films there in the Demons 25 list there, Dale.
Yeah,
the
Babadook, I think
number 5.
Haxan was a good one from 1922. That's a film I'm going to host.
And Babadook from 2014. Never mind.
No, that's a good movie though, Dave. You need to check out the Babadook. That's I think it's from Australia.
Oh,
Australian film. Very good. You should be able to find it somewhere on one of them their Roku channels.
Yeah, I have to get in there and just do a search there.
And I've never seen The Devil Rides Out from 1968. I've always wanted to, and I think Tubi has it right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The Conjuring, I may have seen it when it came out. It's been a while if I have. The Seventh Victim, 1943. Tom Conway.
Slave to Satan. Yeah, tagline is Slave to Satan. Kim Hunter. Boy, she would have been young in that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Black Sunday. Kind of demonic. Yeah. I don't know where they're getting demonic from 1934 Black Cat, though.
I don't either. I really don't.
I don't get it at all. There was some devil worship, I believe. Was it that one? Yeah, it was that one, not the Raven. It was Black Cat. But there was no demons appearing or summoned that I'm aware of.
No. I don't recall that happening, no.
Definitely a classic picture, but I just wouldn't put it in this category.
No. I would put it in the category of the best Price Lugosi film ever made. Is what I would put it as.
Yeah. Arguably. Raven,
I mean, Son of Frankenstein, where Lugosi played Igor, that was that would have been close, except that Karloff was the monster. He didn't really say a whole lot in general.
Yeah. And in The Body Snatcher, Lugosi's role was really diminished, and he didn't get to speak too much in that one, where Karloff got much of the dialogue. Quite the opposite of Frankenstein. In that regard.
Yeah.
Son of
right.
Frankenstein. Yep. Yeah. But they did play opposite each other there. And Conjuring 2, I do believe I seen the first one of that one. Spirits of the Dead. Three directors each adapt a post-show story to the screen. So it's a... you know what they could have added was the third story in Trilogy of Terror with the Zuni fetish doll coming after Karen Black. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of demonic little crutter there, perhaps. And of course, you've got to add Lord of the Rings with the Balrog is definitely a demon. In fact, in the game Dungeons & Dragons, I believe in the original version, they were using some of Tolkien's and Robert E. Howard's characters to, like, legal things. They pull them from their catalogs, but they had rated Balrogs as demons and other creatures from fantasy writings, you know, like sword and sorcery tales.
Now, under IMDb, under demon movies, they had a lot of the movies that would, you know, and sequels, but they had Ghoulies. Would you consider Ghoulies a demons?
Yeah, I think so, to some degree. You can't count the Gremlins because they had a good side. A demon to me is something that's absolutely evil.
Yeah. They had in Poltergeist as number 11.
See, in that game Dungeons & Dragons, the way they distinguish between a devil and a demon... A demon is chaotic evil. Like, they're just totally random evil, where a devil is a lawful evil. They have an order of, you know what I mean? They're in charge and underlings and things like that, which kind of makes sense. It's kind of neat that they rated them that way. But, the entity, a woman is tormented and bothered by an invisible demon.
Okay.
Pestered. pestered in an adult way. How's that?
There you go.
Night of the Demons from 1988. There better be demons in there if you're going to call it that. The Sixth Sense? No, yeah. Come on. That is not a demon.
No. No.
Poltergeist, arguably, kind of more of a ghost tale, in my opinion.
Now, they've got Wishmaster movies here also.
Yeah.
Demonic Vision.
13 Ghosts. That's a ghost story. Haunting ghost story.
Ghosts aren't all demons.
No, they're not. Some are just
ghosts. I
wouldn't
think.
Drag Me to Hell. I've been told that is such a good movie, and I've yet seen it. Rosemary
There's
Baby
Pumpkin
again.
Man.
That's the devil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about Child's Play? The first Chucky movie. Eh? No, that's a possession, more of a possession film. Hellraisers, the Hellraiser series, absolutely. The Cenobites, those are all demons. I would go with that. Oh, Dave got disconnected, and I don't think he can get back in. And so, with that being said, let us get James Durante. Thanks for listening in the after party, folks, here at Erie House Radio, as the Schnozzola takes us away.
Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Horrible, up we the same, and it could think it do.
Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Do you mind turning off the radio?